Welcome to a special edition of the Marketplace Roundtable podcast featuring Jay Mintzmyer of Value Investor's Edge. Jay first began contributing to Seeking Alpha in 2011, building up a large following through his work covering shipping stocks, probably about as comprehensively as they're covered anywhere online or in print. Since 2015, Jay has run the Value Investor's Edge Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. The service offers intensive coverage of deep value opportunities in the shipping, energy, MLP, and industrial sectors. You can subscribe to Value Investor's Edge by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Jay Mintzmyer, that's Mintzmyer, or Value Investor's Edge into the search bar at the top of the site. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Seeking Alpha is a website where authors from around the world share their ideas and analysis on the stock market. The Marketplace is our platform for authors to run investing analysis and idea services so that readers can take their investing to the next level. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. And now your host, Jay Mintzmyer.
Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon if you're joining us from Europe. We're hosting another iteration of Value Investor's Edge Live, recording on the morning of January 18th, 2022 at about 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Today, we're privileged to host Zim Integrated Shipping CFO Xavier Destrieu, who will talk to us about Zim's positioning in the container liner sector, as well as their prospects going forward. We'll talk about some capital allocation, as well as other Zim-specific business items. Xavier, good morning and good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning to you, Jay. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We're honored to have Zim on our platform. It's been a fantastic investment for many of us over the past year, and we're looking forward to learning more about the company. Before we begin, some disclosures, disclaimers. Nothing on the call today constitutes official company guidance. They'll be reporting their official Q4 results here probably in 4 or 5 weeks. We'll get more color from them on those specific numbers. We won't dive into that today. In regards to investment advice, nothing on the call constitutes official advice or recommendations. Always do your own due diligence. Please be advised, I have a long investing and trading position in Zim Integrated Shipping, stock symbol ZIM. This is being recorded on the morning of January 18th. So if you're listening to this recording at a later date, please be advised positions may be updated. With all the disclaimers and disclosures done, Xavier, again, welcome. Let's start out by talking about the big picture here. 2021 was obviously a huge year for Zim, both operationally and financially. Let's start off broadly talking about the outlook now for 2022. Do you see more strength in the market ahead, or do you think we're past the peaks of the top earnings?
Thanks, Jay. I think you're right in saying that the shipping industry by and large is currently experiencing exceptional times. I mean, we've never seen such market conditions in the past, so we are obviously, I think, all in uncharted territories here. So 2021 has been a very strong year throughout, and the good days, by the way, started before that. The recovery started already towards the second half of 2020, and the momentum has been growing and growing quarter after quarter. So in 2021, we, for example, have delivered quarter after quarter record results, each quarter beating the preceding quarter. And the key question is, now that we about to close 2021 financials, and we will provide our full year financials very, very soon now, we are obviously looking ahead into 2022. And what we can see for sure is that the beginning of the year 2022, in terms of current market dynamics and all the drivers that basically fueled the momentum that we've experienced towards the second half of 2021 are still very much there. So that is starting from a demand perspective, especially relevant for us in the US. As you know, Tim is very heavy on trades between Asia to the US. So the demand side on the US is an extremely relevant metric for us to follow and monitor closely. And we see that demand from US consumers is unabated, so it's still extremely strong. And there is no such thing as a slack season profiling ahead of us. So that demand being extremely strong and us still having to navigate through the various challenges around the land side aspect of the supply chain, all the market condition, as I say, are very much the same. And if you look at the SCFI, for example, it has stabilized towards the end of 2021 at an elevated level, and today it's pretty steady. We see obviously the beginning of 2022 now. Maybe the $100 million question is whether that momentum will continue throughout 2022, or at some point, I think we all have to be ready for the normalization of our markets. And so there are two questions here: when will that start to happen? Because we've all been wrong in our initial assessment. Quarter after quarter, we believe that the situation would normalize in the next 6 months or so, and so now I would be very prudent in making an assessment as to when the situation may eventually normalize. And then the second one is, when it does, what will be the new normal for our industry? And this is another, obviously, another topic.
Yeah, fantastic, Savia. You kind of beat me to the follow-up questions, if you were, because, you know, what I wanted to kind of ask you next is, you know, is there a risk of a near-term downturn in these rates? Because I've been incorrect as well last year. The rates have been way higher and lasted much longer than I would have expected. Is there a big risk of a near-term downturn? And then what are some of the biggest risks in this market in 2022 as you go forward?
Is there a near-term risk with no major, like, I don't know, external factor, like a big shock that nobody would be able to predict nor to control, I don't know, in terms of bilateral relationships, say, between China and the US? That is a risk to our industry, and this is an intrinsic risk to our industry. But today, without any major shock, that external shock to our industry, in the near term, what we think is that all the drivers, again, on the supply, on the land side operations of our activity, and that is true, by the way, in Asia and on the receiving end also in the US, maybe not exactly for the same reason, but all the drivers being still very much there in Asia and in China. You have this zero COVID policy that is very much enforced, and when there is a situation of a COVID case in the terminal is shut down, which is triggering additional disruptions, and that has a ripple effect on all of the of the trades and all the way to the receiving end. And in the US, we see, as I was mentioning earlier on, the demand is still extremely resilient. The inventories at the main wholesalers and retailers are still at levels that are below what we think our customers would want them to want those inventory levels to be. So the pull from a demand side is still very much there, and the complications, lack of drivers, lack of chassis in the terminals, the productivity of the terminals being not as good as it used to be before, mean that there are still issues, bottlenecks on the receiving end. So that what explains also why we see today that the major index, the SCFI, is steady, despite the fact that we should normally be today from a seasonality perspective in a weaker season. So on the near term, we don't see, and we need to define what near term means maybe, But for the foreseeable future for us, we do not see major reason to think that the situation will change drastically over the next months or so. Whether in the second half of 2022 this is something that is a possibility, yes, but it is not a Q1. It is not most likely not a Q1 change.
Yeah, certainly. That's helpful. And of course, we've seen the enormous congestion both across the world, but especially in LA Long Beach. And kind of a niche question for you, but we did notice last fall that you responded really quickly in LA. You diverted some of your services away from there for, I think it was a period of 6 to 8 weeks. That was one area where you were nimble and responded away from that congestion. Do you have any updates on the LA service? Are you planning on putting that back into service, or is that are you still diverting your ships away from there for now?
No, you're absolutely right. We tried to the best extent possible to optimize the allocation of our fleet and potentially redirect capacity to trades where the congestion might be less severe. It is a bit pointless for us to sail the ship between Asia to LA and then have the same ship wait a few weeks outside of the terminal because it cannot discharge. So we've been doing that on a case by case basis. We need to also and since we have three services that that link China and Southeast Asia, including Vietnam, Thailand, to LA, we've been playing a little bit on the schedule and on the vessel allocation to try to optimize vessel utilization and redirected some of our capacity to the East Coast in some cases. So we will continue to do so for as long as there are issues in any given terminals. But we also want to maintain, obviously, a service into LA. So there will be no situation whereby we just get out of LA and reposition all of our capacity elsewhere. It is important for us as well to be able to guarantee to our customers that we will continue to sail in the places where they expect to see their cargo being discharged. But that being said, yes, we, by reallocating some of the capacity that would otherwise be stranded at sea, as a stranger that may be, is something that we've done in the past and that we will continue to do on an opportunistic basis if we see that this is the right move.
Yeah, certainly makes sense. And it looks like going back, I mean, it's only been a couple of months, but it looks like diverting away from LA and Long Beach was certainly the right operational call. The congestion only seems to have gotten worse there, and there's no clear outing of that congestion. I do want to talk a little bit about the contract structure of your business, because part of your business, as I understand it, around 50% is immediate spot freight, and the other 50% is a longer term, roughly 1 year contracts. My understanding is that we're in a contract negotiation season right now, and you're setting up the new rates for 2022. Can you offer a little bit of commentary about how those rates are looking as compared to last year? And then what sort of percentage is ZIM looking to do in terms of longer term contract freight? Is it going to be around 50%, or do you plan to do more?
Yes, the trades that are very much subject to long-term contract discussions with the main customers, being the BCOs, the beneficiary cargo owner, or the freight forwarders, are indeed Asia to the US trade lanes. That those trades represent 50% of our overall volume. The rest is outside of those trade lanes, intra-Asia, Asia to the Med, for example, Asia to South America, where we also have some trade lanes. And those trades are much more subject to spot and not so much subject to long-term contracts. So what we are talking about here is contract discussions with some of our customers on our Asia to the US trade lanes that represent close to 50% of our overall volume. And then when we make our determination as to what is the percentage of the volume that we would like to contract for a 12-month period at minima, and look at how much we want to remain exposed to spot, there are obviously various drivers that come into consideration. First of all, where the spot market is at the time when we are entering into such discussions is one element that we take into consideration. Maybe more importantly, what is our short-term, mid-term outlook in terms of what the spot market will do? Because if we are a very strongly firm believer that for the next 12 months, the debate will be very much around having access to capacity from a customer perspective, to having access to space, and we might want to promote spot versus contract. But that being said, we also have to maintain our long-lasting relationship with our key customers. And from their end, what is currently critical, especially even more critical, having experienced the situation that they're in for the past few quarters now, is they want to have visibility on access to space, and they want to make sure that we, as a shipping line, will secure and guarantee space on our ships for their own cargo, and so that they can plan ahead their overall logistic and supply chain. So those discussions that are taking place now, because you're right to mention that on the Trans-Pacific trades, the contract discussions take place today, and the new rates will prevail as from 1st of May for the next 12 months or more. So we are right at the beginning of the discussions. What we can clearly say is that, like I said, customers are very much looking to find out what is the space that we would be willing to allocate to them. And then the rate at which we would be securing that space for them is today maybe on the not such the important question. The primary question is the volume, the capacity that we would be willing to lock for them. Then there is the second question, which is the duration of the contracts. Traditionally, in our industry and on those trade lanes, the duration for contracts are 12 months, and they are being rediscussed every first quarter on every year, so that the new rates are being updated on the 1st of May. Today and this time around, we are having some customers that do approach us and obviously as well other shipping lines, trying to see whether we would entertain extending or agreeing to enter today in contract for a given volume for more than 12 months. So we can talk here about 18 months, 24 months, up to 3 years. So some of our customers are indeed making this type of request to try to investigate as to whether we would entertain that and those type of options. And we will look into this, obviously. Huh? And for us, the decision will be a mix of what is the customer, what is the long-lasting relationship that we've had in the past with the customer, is it a good-paying customer? Can we rely on the cargo that the customer will entrust to us? Do we want to, or do we agree that the proposed contract rate does not come at a too significant discount versus what we think the spot might look like over the duration of the contract? So all those drivers come in, but it's true that this time the discussions are not only about what will be the rate for the next 12 months. The first is what is the space that you can dedicate to us? Second, what is the duration? Could you consider 12 or up to 3 years? And add the rate into this overall discussion mix. So we are putting together our commercial strategy here. This is a daily, weekly process up until the end of April, when we will have obviously finalized and concluded all those negotiations with our customers, so that 1st of May new rates will be applied.
Thank you, Xavier. That's good color, good detail. It's obviously a seller's market in terms of freight, so you're in a great position for these negotiations. You know, one of the biggest bearish arguments or cases against ZIM is that you've had a high percent of spot freight exposure, and also you charter in a lot of ships, right? So if you could secure a lot of your forward freight on 2-year or 3-year contracts, I mean, that would significantly reduce the downside risk in your firm and really just blow away the bearish case, as it were. So we're looking forward to updates. I don't know if you'll be able to share those updates on the Q4 call here and expected in early March, but if not, hopefully shortly thereafter. I would urge you to share as much details as you can once those negotiations are done, of course. One other question I wanted to ask is about the 2M Alliance. There was some talks about renegotiating that alliance last fall. One of the bearish arguments from a major bank was that the 2M Alliance would be changed, or that your contracts would be different. Can you give me any color about the 2M negotiations? Has anything changed?
Yes, the 2M, so Maersk and MSC, first of all, this alliance is the largest of the three. You know that there are three main alliances in our industry. So the 2M, Maersk and MSC, the Alliance, and the Ocean Alliance with other players. The 2M Alliance is the largest of the three, but on the Asia to the US, it is not the biggest. And so this is why us also partnering with Maersk and MSC on those very specific trade lane is something that is obviously of interest for all of the parties. We've entered into this strategic relationship with both of them, with Maersk and MSC, with the 2M, in July 2018. We are today in early 2022. So we've been working together on various trade lanes very efficiently. This partnership is a win-win. We've been talking and discussing together on a recurring basis. And that's a clear cut that that we've all been benefiting from that partnership. It is true that the terms of the relationship are currently under discussion. So I cannot really comment as to the outcome because we are today still in the middle of those discussions that should be concluded. I'm hopeful very, very shortly, and we should be in a position to update on that matter very, very shortly.
Certainly, looking forward to any updates you can provide on that. I know it's been, as you mentioned, a win-win alliance for everybody, and we'll hope that remains the same. I know there's also been a lot of focus worldwide on the structure of these alliances, so I'm sure there's some discussions around that as well. I do want to pivot a little bit now and talk about capital allocation, Zim. You've paid very strong dividends since IPO. I mean, you've already paid out $4.50 just in the last few months. We're expecting a significant payout here in the next couple of months. 30 to 50% is your policy of 2021. Can you talk a little bit about the ranges there? You 30% to 50% is a huge range because your earnings are so large. What are some of the drivers between those, you know, deciding on the lower or higher end? And is there any sort of feeling yet about where the company might go?
So first of all, you are absolutely correct. If we look at what we've done so far, we've returned twice as much back to our shareholders at what we raised in terms of equity back in January. So there was the special dividend that we paid in September for the $2.5, and second dividend, which is the interim dividend on account of 2021 earnings that we distributed in December 2021. And very importantly for us, when it comes to our dividend policy, we've also made a change, which I think was expected or awaited by our investors as being listed in the US. We shifted from an annual dividend policy as well to a quarterly dividend policy, which also I think is a testimony that we do believe that we will be in a position to generate on an ongoing basis quarterly profit, allowing us to distribute a dividend back to our shareholders. So that's the new dividend policy, a quarterly distribution, 20% of our quarterly profit back to our shareholders via dividend. And once a year, there will be this true-up in terms of additional amount that will be distributed so that the overall dividend received over a 12-month period will come to in between 30 to 50% range of our net income. So now, when today, to answer precisely on your question, where are we in terms of our intention to distribute between 30 to 50? And maybe this range is still a bit wide. It is clear that we made a promise to our shareholders on the very first day when we went public, which was that we intended to return significant capital to our shareholders. 2021 has and will be a very strong year for the industry. So it is very likely that we will be distributing a significant dividend in 2000, or we'll announce a significant dividend in our full year financial release. Now, the determination obviously will be made by the board. And in order to make that determination, there will be several parameters that will come into play. Obviously, the results that is already pretty much well known, but also what is the capital allocation strategy for the company going forward? What is the priority of the company, of the management, and of the board is to make sure that we continue to invest in our business, that we develop our commercial prospect. That, and we've maybe we'll talk a little bit about that, but we've been adapting our vessel strategy due to the changing market conditions. So all those drivers will come into play. Not to forget as well, what will be the perception or the outlook for the quarters to come, as we will also expect to deliver some sort of guidance at the same time. So all those will be elements of consideration for the board to decide what will be the actual payout between 30 to 50. But again, it is very likely that the dividend will be quite sizable.
Well, yeah, certainly it's going to be sizable. 30 to 50%, it's going to be a strong payout. It's going to be a large dollar amount, but that still leaves a lot of cash left over. I mean, we're talking well over $1 billion of free cash left over, if not closer to $2 billion. What are Zim's plans right now for those remaining funds? What do those go to? What are some of the uses? Are buybacks potentially on the table?
So maybe to talk and address the buyback question. Buyback is clearly another way to return capital to shareholders. The dividend is one, buyback is another. And so we've said during our Q3 earnings call that the company and the board will explore every single avenue. So this is still very much the case. But going back to then the what would be the capital allocation strategy for the company. It is for us important to continue to make sure that we secure the fleet and the capacity that we need in order to continue to grow our business and to continue to maintain our leadership in some of the trade lanes where we do operate. And at the same time, we need to also acknowledge that the market has changed, and again, for the better, for the industry, and that the relying completely on a spot charter market from a tonnage provider perspective is a risky strategy for ZIM going forward. As we all know, the chartering market is a very hot, and that was to be expected with the current market condition. Every vessel that floats is on the water, and whenever it comes to renewing charter agreement, tonnage providers would request higher daily rate, obviously, and also demand longer commitment. Or if you do not commit for longer, then the daily rate that you need to accept might be quite burdensome. So for our perspective, as we've been growing, and this is also important, we've been growing our volume in 2021 in terms of transported cargo. We have opened new lines. So with that came additional requirement in terms of tonnage, in terms of vessel capacity. And so if we were to remain completely reliant upon the spot or the short-term chartering market, then we would expose ourselves to a significant surge in our vessel cost. So we've changed that, and we've changed that quite early on, towards the end of 2020, so already more than a year ago. So before, or as we were on the up in terms of improved market conditions, and you remember that we announced very early on in February this long-term charter agreement with Seaspan, which is chartering or committing to charter 10,000-15,000 TEU vessels that will be deployed on our Trans-Pacific trade lanes, Asia to the US. So we recognized very early that those vessels, we would have a long-term need for them. When you look at this trade, it is a 70 days rotation. So if you want a weekly service, it means that you need to deploy 10 vessels of a similar capacity. Hence why we opted for 15,000 TEUs. And 15,000 TEUs, why is that? Neo-Panamax, because those are the largest vessels that can actually go across the Panama Canal, and also in terms of height below the Bayonne Bridge. So those vessels will be the cheapest there is to operate on those trade lanes for the longer term. Hence, a very sensible choice for us to make to go and secure that tonnage away from the spot charter market, but go for a new building. Also, I'm sorry, I want to spend a little bit of time here to explain that we could have opted to go buy ourselves those vessels. The reason why we didn't do it is because we acknowledge that LNG, which is the technology that we've opted for, which is the cleaner technology there is today, is or will eventually be replaced by a technology that hopefully will be fully carbon zero. And we didn't want to take the residual value risk of the asset and the technology. So 12 years is okay for us, 20, 25 years, which is the expected useful life of a vessel, was too long for us to take that risk. Hence why we were happy for Seaspan to be in the middle. So we've done that, and then we followed through with another series of 15 7,000 TEU vessels that will nicely replace the mid-sized capacity that we currently deploy on other trade lanes, including, by the way, the trades between Asia to the US West Coast and to LA. And by doing that, we also achieve a double objective, which is making sure that we transition our fleet to a greener fleet much quicker than our competitors. It was easy because we didn't own any vessel. So by just entering into those chartering agreements in a matter of 2 years, because by 2024 we will have received all of those 25 vessels altogether, we will have a fleet that, give or take 40% of our fleet, will be running on LNG fuel, which will position us very competitively among our competitors. So long answer to your question, but making sure that we allocated capital to ensuring long-term access and cheap access to capacity, to the core capacity that we know we will have a long-term use for, was and is and continue to be a very important priority for the company. Second, with vessel comes boxes. When we grow, containers, equipment, we need to bring in additional equipment, and we've done that extensively in 2021. In 21, we invested $900 million or so in additional equipment. We will continue to renew our fleet of containers going forward, and that's also an important aspect. The third one is we are looking at, and we will continue, we will monitor the potential for us to acquire shipping lines, and this is us being true to our DNA of being a pure ocean player. So today the idea for us is to see whether in the regional trades, for example, intra-Asia, where we are very active and quite strong, where we could see opportunity to acquire smaller local shipping lines that would allow us to accelerate our growth on those very very dynamic trade lanes. So we will also want to make sure that we retain the ability to act and potentially seal a transaction if we were to see that opportunity coming our way. And on top of all this, but we already mentioned that our intention is to make sure that we will always go and return significant capital to our shareholders. But vessels in containers, and making sure that we have the ability to seize opportunity in the M&A market on the regional level is something that will continue to be on our agenda.
Thanks, Xavier. I appreciate that extensive rundown of all the potential capital allocation potentials and opportunities in 2022. It'll be interesting to see where you go on some of that stuff. I do agree on the vessels that you acquired or have contracted with Seaspan. The contract terms look very attractive, at least compared to the current market. So that looks like it was a well-timed deal. We'll have to see how it goes. Look, I got to push back, or I got to ask a little bit more here on repurchases. It's something that's on every investor's mind, at least most of the folks that I've talked with, especially U.S. retail investors in particular, they're curious on Zim's valuations. Like, I mean, if you look at forward earnings, you guys trade likely well under 2x forward earnings, and that's before considering the substantial cash balance right on the sheet. If you look at enterprise value to EBITDA, you trade at a very small multiple as well, well below most of your peers. There's also some sellers in the market. We've had Deutsche Bank out there selling some shares recently. We have Danaos Corp, which has trimmed some of their shares. Why not make this a win-win? Why not buy some of those block shares back and build value for your shareholders and also take care of that overhang? Is there anything holding you back? I guess we're just curious because the response has always been, well, we don't have board authorization. Well, why not? Yeah. Why don't we have board authorization?
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe there is, there is, this is not a textbook case here. We are, let's remember that we've been, we are a young company from a market perspective. We got listed in January, and I think that there are not so many occasions where a year or 11 months after having been listed, a company would go and buy back its own share. That's, I think, maybe a unique situation we're in. Again, I'm not suggesting that there is not a case here for us and for the company to entertain. The discussion will continue and will continue to take place at a board level. When you say that the share price is clearly undervalued, I mean, I like to hear you say that, and I would not be, I'm sure, the first CFO to say that. I also believe that there is some potential for our share price to improve, and that's not something that I'm going to deny here. That's for sure. And then when it comes to the questions as to whether there is a share overhang, you were mentioning some of our legacy, a large legacy holder that combined, I think, 18% of our shares. Is there an overhang? What we wanted to make sure of for us, and one of our primary objectives was really to create liquidity in the market, and I think we've done a good job at doing just that. If we look at the average trading volume, it's in excess of 3 million shares a day. I think you mentioned the Danaos. I think Danaos filed recently, and so their holding is in the region of 7 million shares. That is 2 days worth of trading. So whether that is a real threat for the share price if they were to throw the shares at the market, I'm not so sure. And then why would they throw the share at the market? They haven't done that. Maybe their perception is as well that the share price is not where it should be, and this is why we see that nobody's moving. And I don't know. I mean, there might be some explanations here that may come to the conclusion that is there really a share overhang? That's maybe not such a clear cut.
Thanks, Xavier. I mean, the idea of a share overhang has persisted with Zim ever since IPO. And of course, the IPO was at $15. I was lucky enough to be able to buy between 11 and 14 after the IPO. And of course, the overhang, quote unquote, was a big deal back then. And, you know, the stock has went up nearly 5x from that purchase price. So yeah, I agree with you that, you know, the overhang by itself is certainly not a reason to steer away from an investment. However, I would push back again, just really quickly, on the fact of you know, sellers impacting the share price. We saw this in December. I know you probably can't comment on specifics, and we're still waiting for filings from Deutsche Bank, but we saw in December where your price went from almost $60, basically down to the mid 40s. Based on one large shareholder reportedly selling a large stake. So, you know, I guess the pushback or unsolicited advocacy from my part is, look, I know you can't speak for the board, Xavier, but if you get that authorization in place and an opportunity like that comes across your desk, you know, now you can act on it, right? Because it seemed like Zim was not in a position in December to act on this situation. Whereas maybe in February or March or April, who knows when it is, maybe there'll be another opportunity. So I think that's the big advocacy piece.
I hear you. And like I said, and I'm sorry to sound a little bit like a broken record here, but like I said, we are not saying that there will be no buyback. We are saying that we don't feel the need that we need to rush into any decision in this respect. We are saying that we will continue to look at what are the best options for the company to create long-term shareholder value. We continue to say that share buyback is one possible avenue to achieve that. And if it is a proven avenue to achieve that, the board will consider.
Yeah, thank you. I realize there's only so much you can say, but at least you've heard, what a lot of investors are wondering about and asking about. Look, one of the issues with Zim is the tax situation. You pay a 23% corporate tax rate in Israel on your shipping business, and when you pay dividends, to U.S. investors or other investors, there's a 25% withholding rate. Now, I saw a recent headline or a recent press release that was talking, not from you, not from Zim, but it was from a third party, talking about Zim pushing back on the tonnage tax, talking about trying to change the structure of your corporate tax rate. My understanding is that could potentially take your 23% income tax rate and reduce that far lower, maybe 1% or 2%. Can you talk a little bit about that? I imagine it's a sensitive topic, but is there anything you can say on the tax negotiations?
Yes, I mean we are not pushing back on this. Actually, we have engaged with the tax authority to see and to enter into a discussion and a dialogue with them to see whether they would entertain putting in place in Israel a tax regime which would be indeed similar to what is available in other jurisdiction where our competitors are based, or some of our competitors are based. Which is the tonnage tax regime. And what is the tonnage tax regime? It basically tax the shipping companies not based on the income that they generate, but based on the capacity that they operate. And so there are various very there are quite a few variations around what could be the tonnage tax in jurisdiction A, B, C, and D. But by and large, that is the logic of the tonnage tax regime. And in Israel, there is no such thing as a tonnage tax. There was and there had been talks and discussions that were initiated back in 2017. And I think at some point it was also discussed that it could be promulgated into law in 2018, and then was dropped, and nothing happened. So this is why we are in a situation whereby let's remember that we are we say we are a global niche player, but we are in global niche. There is global, meaning that a lot of our activity is actually generated outside of Israel. When we talk about the trans-Pacific trades, this is between Asia to the U.S., and the vessels do not call, do not go through Israel. And this is obviously the very nature of our industry being a global player. So that was just that this is also what justifies in some other jurisdiction this tonnage tax regime. So it is only I think fair that we engage and start discussing with the tax authority here to see whether there is a possibility for the state to look into what is happening elsewhere. And again, it's not everywhere, but there are places where it is the case, and see whether that would be relevant also for Israel to consider. That's the nature of the discussions we're having with the tax authority here in Israel, in a view, obviously, to reduce the effective tax rate that we would be subject to. Otherwise, by default, we will be subject to the prevailing corporate tax rate of 23%.
Yeah, thanks, Xavier. That was actually decent color considering how sensitive of a topic it must be. And if investors are not paying attention to this, I hope they will be, because if your 23% corporate tax rate would switch into a tonnage tax, I mean, I've just ran the numbers based on fiscal year 2022 estimates, and that could add up to, in my estimates, and I might be wrong, but that could add between $5 and $10, actually maybe over $10, depending on how strong your year is, in net earnings to the company. So this would be a massive, massive catalyst. Is there any potential timing on this thing? Is it a multi-month discussion, or would you might be having an update by your next quarter? Anything you can say on that?
Difficult to say. I mean, obviously, this is a complex topic. It would require changing the law, which in itself is something that takes time. So the discussions are ongoing, and we've presented our case to the tax authority. They are reviewing it, and it will be there will be an ongoing dialogue in this respect. And so it's very difficult for me to assess any or to provide any indication in terms of timetable and even in terms of possible outcome. It's too early for me to comment on this. I can only confirm that indeed we have engaged with the tax authority on that topic.
Understandable. Well, wishing you the best of luck. It's never easy to change tax laws in your favor. So it's an uphill battle. So best of luck with that one. Look, earlier on capital allocation, we talked about different ways you could spend some of your money. And one of the ways we've noticed Zim has been spending their money in the last year or two has been on these digital initiatives, stuff like ShipForward, CyberStar, things like that. However, you know, we've seen the press releases, but there's not, you know, broken down operational results. The market doesn't seem to be giving any sort of valuations to these digital ventures. Can you talk briefly, just real quickly, about those ventures and when might we get to the point where those individual digital ventures have a valuation or have fundamentals we can talk about?
Yes, it's true that it's been part of our DNA and part of our transformation over the past few years that we've invested in significantly, and when I say significantly, it's not necessarily in terms of a dollar value, but in terms of resources and in terms of time in enhancing our digital offering. We've been active on three fronts. The first one, we've been very much active in developing tools that would help us be better than our competitors. And those are transparent to the outside world, but explain to some extent, if you look and benchmark us against some of our competitors and you look at the average freight rates that we command, you give us even net of the mix of a line where we operate, you will see that we are doing not so bad compared to others and maybe doing even better. And this is all the efforts that we've put into dynamic pricing, yield management type of solutions that we are running and working with daily within the organization. So that's one. And that's, again, transparent to the outside world. The second element or the second area where we've been investing, which is more visible, is us willing to take part of the digitization of our industry. And it started already in 2018 when we engaged and partner and leverage also our position here in Israel, which maybe you know, Israel is labeled Startup Nation. I can say that I'm French, so there is no chauvinistic feeling here. But it is very true that there is a lot of tech savvy entrepreneurs surrounding us, and we partnered in 2018 with a company called Wave that was willing to use the blockchain technology to put together an electronic bill of lading, and we were the first to put to market this solution that we marketed towards our customers. And we were so pleased with that that we wanted to push it so that it could become a standard for our industry. And so we wanted our competitors to also adopt that new electronic bill of lading. And that worked quite well with some very senior names, big names in our industry now also using that Wave bill of lading based on blockchain technology. So it is us, despite the fact that we are a smaller shipping player, actively engaging so that our industry and we are contributing to the digitization of our industry. That's the second area. The third area has been, we said, and we talked a little bit about capital allocation. What is it that we want to do going forward? Do we have a strategy to venture into, logistics and invest massively in this respect? Not so much. We want to continue to focus on our core know-how, which is ocean shipping, but we are also looking at ways to leverage our digital edge in order to potentially build solutions that could bring a nice adjacent income stream on top or in addition to our core shipping activity. And that's where we've been also quite active, and you did mention one. ShipForward is one of them, which we think has a great potential in terms of potential for growth, which required for us very little capital allocation, because what is ShipForward? ShipForward aims at being a fully digital freight forwarder proposition. So today you have, if you go online, you can have offerings online that that could potentially provide you with the service that you need. But what happens is behind the screen, you have a lot of back office function activity people that that try to formulate or put together the solution in order to come back to you and provide you with a bespoke solution for your own need. No, what we are trying to do here is not that, and this is why we are doing it trade by trade, and we will expand as we go. We are we have a team of 15 people, and that's it, that have developed some tools and some algorithm in order to propose and directly when you make your express your need on the portal, they will be able digitally to say to you, well, this is what we can propose in terms of solution for the needs that you've expressed, fully digital. So we are indeed actively engaged in those new digital venture in a way, which is a mix of AI, BI, big data, you name it. And today it's early stage. It's seed, I would want to say. So it's not that material to our bottom line as of yet. But we feel very strong about the future prospect, and we are very pleased to see that even though it's seed, we already have a revenue, and we already have a proposition, and we are already building traction. So I hope that we will be in a position sooner rather than later to start talking when I'm talking about the financial performance of the company about other income stream that would come on top of our core shipping activity and see that those contribution may become quite material. But as of today, it's a little bit early to say, and it's hopefully something for a bit later.
Yeah, that's helpful, Xavier. And of course, right now, as you mentioned, the contributions financially are smaller. These are, as it were, a collection of internal startups, basically. But it's interesting to see, we're living in a investing world or a financial market where tech startups and things, innovation like you're doing internally, are getting valued at massive multiples. Right, maybe it's 20 times sales or whatnot, whereas traditional shipping businesses are not valued very high. And Zim, as I've mentioned, I know internal estimates may vary. We're talking about forward year 2022 results, but look, Zim trades below 2x forward earnings. And at the same time, you're doing all of this innovation, you're doing all this industry leading stuff. So we're hoping it can break out. I don't know if it'll be next quarter or maybe several quarters in the future, but just take it as some encouragement. And investors are always looking for more color. So if there's room to talk more on this in quarter one and quarter two results and so forward, we look forward to it. Look, Xavier, we're running low on time. I really appreciate you here today. I do want to ask a little bit about fiscal year 2022. I know we're just starting it. We're only 3 weeks into 2022 at this point. But in 2021, it looks like you're going to do well over $35, nearly $40 per share in earnings. I've heard, and I've modeled even using potential freight rates, that 2022 might be even better. Is that even possible that 2022 could be better than 21?
Like I said, we've been always wrong in our forecast, and that's why we had to upgrade our guidance every single quarter in 2021. So I guess nothing is impossible. The situation that will likely be the one in 2022 is a we see a strong start in 2022, and the question is if the momentum continues, then there's no reason to think that 2022 will not be a very strong year and could be an even stronger year than 2021. What is likely to happen at some point, and again, from the timing perspective, I don't have a crystal ball, but if we are in a situation whereby the contract rates that we are currently discussing and that will be reset as from the 1st of May this year are at elevated levels compared to the one that prevailed today, then the revenue stream that we will get from our contracted cargo will be higher. And assuming that we have the same allocation, spot versus contract, then the revenue that we will derive from our contract cargo in 2022 will be higher than the one that we will have derived in 2021. And then what the spot market will do is the unknown, and or will be the unknown in a few months from now. And if the spot market holds for a decent period of time, then we might end up in a situation you just described. If the freight rates go down, the spot market go down because the situation normalizes, then the question will be at which pace, and is the pace of the normalization of the spot market offsetting the extra income that we are getting from the contract cargo, yes or no? I guess that is where the arbitrage will be at some point, most probably towards the second half of 2022.
Certainly. Well, it doesn't take a financial genius to open up a 1-year chart of container freight rates. You mentioned yourself the SCFI, and notice that they are up massively year over year. So you're right. We don't know how the second half of the year of 2022 is going to look, but it seems pretty obvious to me that the first half of 2022 is going to blow 2021 out of the water. And 2021 first half was pretty darn good. So I guess fingers crossed, we'll continue to watch the markets, and best of luck on your contract negotiations. Xavier, thanks for joining us this morning. Really appreciate having you here.
Thank you very much, dear.
This includes another iteration of Value Investor's Edge Live. We just hosted Zim Integrated Shipping CFO Xavier Destrue. We discussed Zim's positioning in the global liner business. As a reminder, nothing on the call today constitutes official company guidance or investment recommendations of any form. I have a long position investing and trading in Zim Integrated Shipping, stock symbol ZIM. This was recorded on the morning of 18 January 2022. So if you listen to a recording at a later date, please be advised positions may have changed.